We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning and welcome to Focus, hour two of the program. This is our morning talk show. My name's David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. Harriet Williamson is the producer for the program. Jason Croft set the controls this hour, and Kyle Mabry was on for hour number one. In this part of the show, we'll be exploring the idea of restorative justice. Around the world, there are people in different countries working in different ways to develop a kind of justice system that seeks alternatives to punishment. And on the program we have with us today, one such person. His name is Dominic Barter. He is known now around the world as a practitioner and teacher of restorative justice. He makes his home in Brazil, and he and some others have developed an approach to restorative practice that they call restorative circles. It's something that developed in some of the poorest areas of Rio by Barter and his associates as a way of dealing with conflict that doesn't involve punishment. And in fact, it's been selected by the National Endowment for Science, Technology, and the Arts. This is a British think tank, as one of the world's 10 most radically effective social interventions, and is being used now in Brazil, in youth courts, and in school districts. And in fact, in something like 20 countries around the world, people are also using this approach. He's spent a lot of time traveling around the country talking about it, and is here in Champaign-Urbana this week. This is his only visit to North America this year, and he'll be talking about it and giving a number of training sessions. So if there are people who are in Champaign-Urbana who are interested, you can take advantage of this. This is taking place at the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center starting tomorrow. And the intention tomorrow is simply to introduce people to the idea of restorative circles. And then in the days following that, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I think, that there will be a series of training sessions and workshops. So if people want to take it further, they can do that. But the first thing that people can do is turn up tomorrow morning at 8:30 at the Independent Media Center if they would simply like to hear more about the idea of restorative circles. And that's also, of course, what we'll be talking about here in this part of the show, to try to introduce the concept. So here, as always, the conversation welcomes people in. You have questions, comments, you want to give us a call, you can certainly do that. 333-9455 is the number for Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. And you can also send an email if you want to do that. The address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you very much for having me.
Just we'll talk specifically about restorative circles. And there is a website which is restorativecircles.org. People want to find out more about you that way. So we'll talk about that specifically. But maybe just to start, it would be good to talk about the idea of restorative justice and what that means.
The concept of restorative justice is still emerging. It's still growing. And that's one of the reasons I think that the area is so fertile at the moment. There's so much research going on, so much development of practices, because it's a very broad church. But roughly speaking, restorative practices are responses to conflict which seek to create a sustainable result that produces benefits for everybody involved, and recognizes that there are limits to the current ways that we're responding to injustice, both within the formal justice systems and in our normal lives, in our homes, in our workplaces, in our schools, in our churches, in our neighborhoods. Restorative justice seeks to rethink the basic concepts of justice to see what can we do to create even more just results.
Yeah. This, just before we got going, we were talking about this idea of justice, how it's defined and how people talk about it. And I think that it is true that for most people, if you ask them that question, well, what define justice? What do you mean by justice? That it wouldn't be very long before people would say, well, it has something to do with some wrong has been done. We identify the person who is responsible, and then we hold that person accountable so that there is some kind of of sanction. So it's identifying a guilty party and then meeting out, most of the time, some kind of punishment, which seems to somehow appeal to people's inner notion that there's some kind of equivalence here. Something bad happens, well, something bad should happen to that person, and that somehow restores things to the status quo ante. Except that really doesn't, a lot of people would say, no, that really doesn't do anything, really.
No, the research suggests that it doesn't create the kind of ongoing community safety for us collectively, and it doesn't produce the individual results that we're looking for in terms of not necessarily simply closure, but actually some sense of a response that was proportionate to what happened occurred, but that it was a healing response. It was a response that actually sought to reestablish the bonds that were broken, to increase my sense of both being safe and of understanding the needs of others. So our current systems have a limited ability to do that, and restorative justice seeks to do that in more effective ways.
Yeah. How did you get involved in doing this?
Well, I fell in love with a Brazilian, and she went home. I was living in Europe at the time, and after 6 months, I went after her, and I arrived in this extraordinary city, Rio de Janeiro, one of the most beautiful places, I think, on Earth, with this extraordinary, vibrant culture, this amazing amazing human richness in the way that Brazilians live their life. This is almost 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I saw all the images that people have of Rio around me, but I also saw a shocking social divide and an amazing, not just a daily violence in terms of the risk to people's well-being as they walk along the street and trying to have their lives, but also structural violence built into society. And I really wasn't prepared for that at all. I can remember thinking at the time, if I'd arrived in South Africa at the time, I might have been shocked, but I couldn't say I hadn't been warned. But in Rio, it really wasn't what I expected. And it took me a long time to work out how I wanted to respond to that. But what I did know was that I couldn't live there without finding a way of relating to that context, which was in some way transformative. Mm. I needed to put myself out there to contribute to the kind of world that I would like to live in.
Mm. I've seen you talk about the whole idea of restorative circles and where this comes from. And I guess I was really intrigued by one of the things that you said, that in a way, this idea, it's not something that you need to invent, because it's really a very old idea. So perhaps rather than inventing something here, what this is a rediscovery of something.
Yeah, I think it can be seen as a rediscovery. And although we often associate it with things that come from the past, I wonder if it might not be more accurate to associate it with the margins of our current society. Mm. And the North American experience, the Australian, New Zealand experience, has shown that a lot of the learning that we need to recover around restorative practices can be found in indigenous communities and other marginalized communities, because they have preserved some of the basic principles and occasionally some very useful practices as well that can contribute to our modern understanding. In Brazil, we didn't find it within indigenous communities. We found it within the margins of society in the center of our urban centers. So that suggests that it's not simply something that comes from the past or that comes from cultures that have preserved aspects of the past, but really it comes from the outskirts of the dynamics of power in society, where centralized power reaches and affects us less, alternatives begin to emerge naturally. Mm. So in the favelas, in the shantytowns of Rio, people were living under, in many ways, a feudal lifestyle, ruled by drug gangs who, for 20, 30, even 40 years, had really been in control of these communities. The state had been largely absent. And within these spaces, they needed very immediate, concrete ways to respond to the daily conflicts of their lives. And the basic tenets of restorative justice emerged organically from a recognition of their needs.
Hmm. So tell me, though, you went to Brazil. You saw what life is like. You wanted to be involved. How, though, really did your doing this kind of work, though, develop?
I was sitting at home one day, and I'd expressed many times to people that I wanted to do something, and they had kindly but firmly reminded me that it was dangerous, that I was a foreigner.
Yeah,
I had few words of Portuguese, and I didn't have any relevant past professional or personal experience that I could see that would enable me to make some kind of contribution. And so I had done nothing for a while, and this was becoming intolerable. And I was sitting at home, and I remembered that a few years previously, I'd watched a couple in the street having an argument. This is back in Europe. And I'd noticed that as they continued to not understand each other, they raised their voices to each other. And I can remember at the time just having this odd thought, how strange that they do that. They're not physically further away from each other. But it's as if their bodies are responding as if they were far away from each other, as if they needed to raise their voice to be understood, because the impression was that understanding was not occurring. I had this strange thought and just went on my way. And I remembered that sitting at home in Rio years later. And I wondered, maybe the social violence around us is functioning in the same way. Maybe there's a conflict here. And when the two sides demonstrate to each other they are unable to hear what the other is saying, they start to raise the volume. And maybe that's what the violence is. It's an attempt to raise the volume on my message until it becomes impossible for the others not to hear. And the problem with that is that when I raise the volume by using violence, I stimulate pain in the other people, and that pain diminishes their ability to hear me, so that it becomes a vicious circle. So I thought, if the only way I could think of to test this out was to move towards it. I thought, if this is the case, then if I move towards one side of the social conflict in which I'm now a part, then the violence should diminish, if this strange new theory of mine has any carries any water. So I did that. I simply walked into the nearest favela over that invisible line. I crossed the tracks and began to talk to people. And over a series of months, just by listening and having conversations with people, dynamics started to emerge, and the first rough sketches of the process began to appear. And then we worked on it over a number of years, testing and refining the whole time, just watching what is effective, what is effective.
And really, though, it seems when it comes down to it, remarkably simple, that this is not something really complicated, that it's not that difficult to teach someone to do this or introduce them to what the basic idea is.
Well, observing that it is simple, which I agree with you, does not necessarily mean that this is something that is easy for people to get.
Well, yes.
Simple things are often very challenging for us to get our heads around. When we do get our heads around it, then it's second nature.
Let me introduce again the guest for anybody who might have just tuned in. We're talking with Dominic Barter. He is an internationally known restorative justice practitioner and teacher. He now makes his home in Brazil and has been living there for a number of years, and was, with some other people, involved in developing a restorative practice that they call restorative circles. It has been something selected by a lot of people as a positive way of dealing with conflict, sometimes violent conflict, but having some resolution that does not involve violence. They have been doing it now for a number of years in youth courts and in schools around Brazil. Many people in other countries have thought that it was a pretty interesting thing and have been doing it as well. And he's done a lot of traveling to talk about the idea of restorative circles, and he's visiting this week in Champaign-Urbana. And we'll be talking about this at a series of talks taking place at the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center. And again, if you're interested in this and finding out more about it, maybe the thing to do would be tomorrow morning, 8:30, stop by the Independent Media Center, and there will be tomorrow, the first day of his stay here is designed to try to just basically explain the whole idea, explain the whole concept. And then from that, if there are people who are interested in taking part in some workshops and doing some training in this, then that's what he'll be doing for the rest of the week. And on this program, questions are welcome, 333-9455. That's Champaign-Urbana for Champaign-Urbana folks. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. And you also may send us an email at will-talk@illinois.edu. And we do actually have somebody here who would like to join the conversation, someone in Urbana. This is line number one. Hello.
Hi. This is Vicki.
Yes.
I'm really glad that you're doing this program, and the first thing I thought of was a program that's seems a companion program, perhaps, in North Carolina called the Listening Project, and I wondered if your guest had ever heard of that.
Yes, I have, Vicky. Thank you. There's a lot of fantastic projects happening throughout the U.S., and I know there are here in Illinois as well that use similar principles to seek the same kind of resolutions.
It seems to me the Listening Project perhaps addresses, it certainly comes in sometimes after conflict has already started, but I think it also can help communities, basically the concept is that they, in communities where they have a lot of immigrant populations come in, this I think is where at least it started, they bring the groups, they first sit down with each group, the local people and the immigrants, and they sit and just listen to their concerns and, what are their issues, what are their concerns, and then they bring the two groups together. I think I'm describing this correctly. Is that right?
That's what I understand, and many restorative practices share this common recognition of the fact that we need to create spaces for dialogue within society, because the way we're living, especially the way we're living these days, involves exposure to a lot of difference. We repeatedly experience people who grew up in contexts that are different from us, who eat differently, who dress differently, pray differently, who think differently in terms of politics or any other essential aspect of our daily living. And these spaces create the opportunity for us to recognize this difference and recognize those elements that unite us, our common humanity.
Wonderful. Well, I'm really glad to hear that you'll be in town. I'm also curious, this may be leaping ahead in the conversation, but what sort of applications do you see in very, very conflicted areas, for instance, the Middle East, and I'm thinking specifically of Israel?
There's a lot of people who are recognizing the value of these principles in different contexts, and there's a lot of similarity between the principles that have informed restorative practices around the world and commissions on truth and reconciliation that seek to create a peaceful future after long-term civil conflict. And I think that the opportunity that we have in the Middle East is to begin to promote these processes of dialogue so that people can understand that the reasons why violence continues to mark most of how we understand the conflict there is that these spaces for dialogue have been lacking, and a lot of pain has been created by the violence used. So it's a recognition that below the violence is a conflict. If we try to repress the conflict, more violence will ensue. So spaces where conflict can manifest itself, can flower fully, that are safe and involve not just expressing our viewpoints, but creating the conditions for other people to hear our common humanity below those viewpoints are absolutely essential.
Wonderful. Well, I'm very glad to hear your program. I'm curious about the entire concept, and I really believe that perhaps the grassroots efforts and coming from the people who are most interested in solving some of their conflicts in their community may help shift power structures. Like you say, I'm very interested that you're working towards both, not just helping the local communities, but also changing the structure of power and how conflict is solved. So thank
you. When we talk about a circle, we're talking about a space of shared power, not a space where we organize chairs in a circle. That's what makes it circular. So that question of power is a key one.
I thank you for the call. Others are welcome. 333-9455. That is the number for folks who are here in Champaign-Urbana. We do also have a toll-free line. That is 800-222-9455. Give an example so that this will be maybe a little bit easier for people to visualize, get a sense of what exactly happens in this the process of the restorative circle.
Maybe I can give you a couple of examples that show the range of application. 3 weeks ago, I was in a shantytown in Rio. The World Cup, the Soccer World Cup, and the Olympics are coming. So a lot of change is happening in Rio at the moment, and one of the changes has been that a key number of these favela shantytowns have been occupied by the military police over the last couple of years. And as part of the occupation in one of these shantytowns, there'd been a decision to restrict a lot of the cultural expressions of this community because they had become indelibly associated with the control of the drug gangs. At the same time, that affected not just the freedom of expression of people living there, but it affected the economy, because when these parties occurred, people came in from outside, And a lot of the people who try to make their living by, for instance, providing food or drink within the favela suddenly had lost a lot of their resources. So for a year in this particular community, there had been a curfew on parties, on kind of open, like dance events, like a club but open air. And the community was really bothered about this. So at one point, about a month ago, a party was occurring and the police came at the time of the curfew and attempted to end the party. And things got rowdy. Plastic bullets were fired. Molotov cocktails were thrown. Police were injured. Residents were injured. And a lot of the trust that had very cautiously been building over the year of the police occupation was really damaged. So the restorative circle involved getting these people, first of all, into the same room. So that can involve some work. That can involve what I call a pre-circle. So in the pre-circle phase, I'm listening to people identifying the acts that have been painful for them, finding out what those acts signify, and checking out what it is that people want to do next. So who needs to be involved in a future conversation? How is this future conversation going to occur? When people are ready to come together, dialogue is not something that most of us know how to do. We use the word, but actually waiting until we understand what someone has said before we move ahead and express ourselves is no longer common in our society. So the person facilitating this meeting will use questions in order to seed dialogue, in order to invite people to an understanding of the essential meaning of what the other person is saying. And through using that process, we can both regain the ability to communicate right now in the present, really humanizing each other in the present, but also we can go back in time to understand what happened at that time, what was really going on, what were the underlying needs and values that were not being met by the other person's actions that led to violence. And through that understanding, rehumanizing each other retroactively in the past, we gain the ability to be able to problem solve. So in that particular situation, an entirely new agreement was established that brought back the possibility of this community to have their parties at the same time as it ensured the police that this wasn't the return of the gang culture. And then we keep evaluating the efficacy of those action plans in what we call the post-circle period, because we really want to find out not simply did people manage to come together to communicate, but did they actually manage to produce results? So that's on a large scale dealing with an urban crisis. But let's take a very much simpler situation, a family dispute. So a lot of the work that people are doing with restorative circles involves the conflicts that naturally emerge as our week goes on in our families. So in this situation, an 8-year-old child wants to take shoes with little roller skates on the bottom that kind of pop out. I don't know what you call it. I don't know if you have them here.
Well, I've seen them. I'm familiar with the idea. Yeah.
So she wants to take these to school, and the school has concerns. They've made requests for students not to do that. They've passed those requests to parents. So the parents say, yes, we'll buy you these shoes, but the agreement is that you only wear them outside school. The child agrees, and then the child takes them to school. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to initiate a process which demonstrates to the child that you are not happy with what happened, but doesn't explain why. You don't want to cause pain in that child, which diminishes their ability to understand that what you want to see happen includes their safety, among different considerations. At the same time, you don't want to let it go. You don't want to say, yeah, rules are rules, but you know, if they're broken, then whatever. You want a response, but you don't want to punish. So what a restorative circle does is it creates a space where the child can be invited to actually hear the genuine concerns that the parents have that include the child's well-being, so that the child recognizes the logic of the rule and starts to understand why it benefits them, or occasionally shares information that perhaps the parents don't know, which would lead them to want to adapt in collaboration whatever that rule is. So whether we're talking about a large-scale social conflict in a favela involving hundreds of people, or whether we're talking about those micro-conflicts of our daily life, the same principles of bringing these people together, creating a space where it's safe to speak and safe to understand each other so that we can make plans that work for everybody are at the center of both responses.
Yeah, very interesting. I have a caller here, someone who I think is on a cell phone. I want to get to them next, and this is line number one. Hello.
Hello, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, I find this subject very interesting across also not just humans, but humans' relations with animals. But the question is, have you looked at this biologically and physiologically, psycho-emotionally, at the fight-or-flight system and how that affects a person when they see that they might be emotionally, religiously, financially threatened, especially physically threatened, and the fight-or-flight system kicks in and their understanding drops rapidly because now they're just in a self-protection mode? I work with horses, and if I push them to that level, then they're not learning. And it's really similar because what you're talking about is a movement that I look at in dealing with animals. And I'm going to hang up and listen to you speak to that.
All right.
Thank you.
That's an interesting thing to bring in. What do you think about that?
There's a lot of social research that's been going on over the last 15 years and increasingly into the way in which the fundamental needs that are at the center of our concerns when we're in a situation of conflict are grounded biologically. And a lot of that research has involved observing primates and other animals and finding out how they function in response to certain stimuli. So I think that we can learn a lot from that research into the field of empathy, into the field of understanding how our body processes danger and how it responds to it, which can help support the emergence of responses which are neither focused on fighting or flight, but are focused on a community response which recognizes the individual as part of a larger systemic context in which the conflict is occurring. One of the changes in viewpoints that restorative justice invites us to have is to see no longer two people or two parties, two groups in conflict in an isolated manner, but to see conflict as belonging to a wider community and manifesting between two individuals or two groups. And that helps us share responsibility more effectively amongst those who are actually participating in setting up the conditions for either a painful response to conflict or a positive response to conflict.
Yeah, I think you've said some things, again, in some of the interviews that I've seen, that I think it's very striking to look at how much conflict has to do with fear, which has to do with the other person being seen as the other, as an other, and that what you try to do, maybe this is easier said than done, but what you try to do is when you have people in a conflict and you try to involve them in this process, that's what you try to do is have them recognize the other person as a person and try to break down this idea, well, that person is really so different from me that I can't understand them, they can't understand me.
And that's particularly the case when the conflict is painful. Conflict itself, two mutually exclusive options. I'm dealing with that many times a day, and most of us deal with it with a lot of creativity and flexibility. And we like the results. And when we don't, we evaluate, and then we shift. The issue comes when the conflict becomes painful, because the pain takes my attention towards me, and it takes it away from the other person. Mm-hmm. And I need to understand, why do feelings manifest in that particular way? So for me, an essential aspect of my learning in this process, as I observed what was emerging in the favelas, was meeting a man called Marshall Rosenberg. Rosenberg's work over the last almost 50 years now has involved understanding what is at the heart of a partnership relationship and what interferes with it. And one of his observations, which for me was very influential, was that when feelings occur, they inform us of the status of certain values or needs that we hold dear. And that on the level of these values or needs, we actually encounter people, even people who, for all intents and purposes, are very, very different from us in their lifestyle, in their opinions, and in their actions. So when I experience that I'm in painful conflict, I know that there are needs involved. I know that the acts that are being committed are symbolic of something which for me is non-optional. I can't give up my sense of justice. I can't say it no longer it matters to me that people are taken care of. It no longer matters to me that people are fed, that people are housed. So when I connect to that level of need, then I no longer reactively attempt to distance myself from conflict as if it's dangerous. I start to recognize I actually need to move towards conflict if I want to diminish violence. When I engage with it, when I start to find out the fundamental values that are held within it, all of us grow.
We're talking this morning in this hour of Focus with Dominic Barter, someone who is well known for working in the area of restorative justice, and specifically with something that he helped to develop called restorative circles, which he has been doing. He and other people have been doing in Brazil now for a number of years, and other places around the world are looking at it too. We'll take a break just here for a moment, and then we'll have more conversation with Dominic Barter. This is Focus.
On the next Fresh Air, Jeffrey Eugenides, the author of The Virgin Suicides and Middlesex. His new novel, The Marriage Plot, involves a romantic triangle between three graduating college students. One of the young men goes off to India to volunteer for Mother Teresa in a home for the destitute, sick, and dying, something Eugenides did as a young man. Join us.
This afternoon at 1 and this evening at 7 on AM 580.
Support for WILL comes from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods on the corner of 6th and University in Champaign, providing Champaign-Urbana with an international selection of chocolates, cheeses, oils, balsamic vinegar, jams, spices, barbecue sauces, and more. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio.
This is Focus, our morning talk show. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're here weekday mornings, 10 to noon, 10 different topics. Tomorrow morning at the 10 o'clock hour, Celeste Quinn will be hosting the show, talking with Susan Kundrat. She is a registered dietitian. She is on the program once a month to talk about issues of food and nutrition. And I think the focus of their conversation tomorrow will be breakfast, an important and neglected meal. Then I will be talking with a novelist in the second hour. His name is John Warner, and we'll be talking about his new book, which is The Funny Man, which is about the trials and tribulations of someone who aspires to be a stand-up comic. You can check on the rest of the week, listen to past programs by going to our website. It's WILL.illinois.edu. Our guest in this hour is Dominic Barter. He is internationally known as practitioner in the area of restorative justice, and developed something, he and a number of other people developed something that they called restorative circles, which is a practice of restorative justice that was developed in Brazil and has now been used lots of places in Brazil, in youth courts, in school districts. It's also being used by adults in many communities. A lot of people around the world have found it interesting. He's traveled around the world and has worked in now more than 20 countries over the last few years talking about this. He's here in Champaign-Urbana to do the same. This is his only visit to North America this year, and he'll be giving a series of talks and workshops Wednesday through Sunday, taking place at the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center. Anyone who is interested in attending should stop by. And what you might do, if you could, is turn up tomorrow morning at 8:30, and tomorrow will be devoted to a kind of a general discussion of restorative circles and what it's all about and how one does it. And then from there, then there'll be some workshops and training sessions, because I think he says that really the best way to learn how to do this is to do it. Is to have some practice in doing it, which is what they will be doing over the next few days. There is also a website, and that is restorativecircles.org, if you'd like to find out more about it. So that's restorativecircles, all as one word, .org. And questions welcome, too, 333-9455. And toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, can you talk a little bit more about what you in Brazil there? Can you point to some ways that show that, in fact, in terms of reducing conflict, or maybe in terms of reducing the number of people who end up in trouble with the police or going to court, that you can actually show this process has worked? And conflict, you can say, yes, we have done something to reduce conflict.
Yes, I'm not sure that we've reduced conflict. But what
never going to reduce conflict.
These distinctions are interesting to me, because the way in which we normally think about justice makes certain responses to justice logical. And the whole movement of restorative justice really starts with a different way of seeing. Mm-hmm. It's when we look at ourselves and our communities in different ways, when we put in first place the need for social cohesion. then we start to create different responses to conflict. So we haven't seen reductions in conflict. We have seen reductions in violence. We have seen increase in social cohesion. Mm-hmm. We have seen issues that don't need to be responded to by restricting someone's liberty being channeled into far more socially beneficial responses. We have seen a tendency for people to commit the same crimes in the same ways to diminish. We've seen the relationship of those people who have experienced harm, sometimes mutual harm, transformed in very dramatic ways. And this is why worldwide the movement builds, and this is why in Brazil, something that began very modestly within the favela communities, which were not at that time looked to in any way as being sources of social innovation. That's why a program that developed there was adopted by the Ministry of Justice, has been implemented by state education authorities, is being used in social services. People in the business community are beginning to ask questions about it. NGOs and people doing work in the most deprived areas are using it. But people are using it also where the material resources are abundant, but conflict continues to create division and separation.
Hmm. One of the things I guess I was really struck by is that it seems in the area of juvenile justice to have actually have had an impact in the number of kids that end up showing up in court.
Yeah, we've had some quite dramatic situations in juvenile justice cases. I'm remembering one that occurred after an armed robbery in a shop that ended with the shopkeeper offering the assailant a job in his shop. And this was towards the beginning of the official pilot projects that the Ministry of Justice established. And I designed the model and did the training. And I can remember when they rang me up and told me that this had happened, I was really concerned. Because when you hear this story and you haven't been through the experience of the circle, it often seems like, well, this is completely irresponsible. Now, I know when people start talking, their understanding of each other can radically change. But we're not going to make a change like this based on a 90-minute conversation, are we? And it was really quite humorous that the facilitators, who I had only recently trained, had to support me in understanding why this decision had been made by the shopkeeper. Not because he was attempting to generously include someone, but in full recognition of what was best for him. As he said during the circle, it's safer for me to have you near me. I know you need basic resources. I know you need food to eat. And now I understand what led you to do that. I want to make sure that you have the basic conditions that you need in order to live well. Mm. So the results can often be quite surprising for those of us who haven't actually passed through the experience itself.
That seems an example, and I'm sure that you like having an example like that because it's a wonderful example of success. Although on the other hand, that might raise unreasonable expectations in people's minds about what this process could actually achieve.
Absolutely.
I don't imagine that kind of thing doesn't happen every day.
But, no, it certainly doesn't. But I want to raise it because an equivalent experience does happen every day. Mm-hmm. And what that example illustrates is how far people can shift in their strategies when they have the information that was previously lacking. And the information that was previously lacking is that which humanizes the other person. So when we start to understand our shared humanity below our actions, often tragically damaging to each other, then possibilities that beforehand would have seemed unwise, if not extremely unlikely, become the logical response.
Yeah. It strikes me that in a case like that it's almost, it almost requires an almost kind of superhuman ability in the person who was the victim to understand the motivation of the alleged assailant. And I would applaud anyone who could do that. It almost surprises me in a way that there would be very many people who could. It seems that this process asks more of the person who is offended against than it does ask of the offender.
Well, I think it's important to point out that we don't have any expectation of change whatsoever. Uh-huh. We're certainly not involved in asking people to forgive, and even less in asking people to forget. Mm-hmm. What we're interested in doing is creating the conditions whereby change can occur in that direction if that is what the people participating see as most beneficial to them. what's interesting, what contradicts many of our expectations, and I find myself surprised by it still, 17 years of doing this work, is that people would see the logic of increasing the bonds of their sense of community with each other rather than doing the opposite. And that suggests a fundamentally different view of justice.
Let's talk with someone else in Champaign, line number one. Hello.
Hello. You hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I'm a strong believer in restorative justice. I mean, many years ago when there was the Victim Offender Reconciliation Program here in Champaign County, I was involved in it, and just the similar example that you just gave about the armed robbery. This was not an armed robbery. It was two teenagers. One was a lookout, and one was trying to steal some clothes out of a store. And I was contacted to help do a mediation for this. And I think the mediation went very well because the young woman who was the lookout had never been in trouble, but although she was in an alternative school system at that time, had never been in trouble. Pulling David, I have my son in with car with me.
Sure.
And I mean, it worked out extremely well. I kept in touch with this young woman until she graduated high school, and she eventually graduated high school. And that was the only offense that was on her record. I mean, it was not ever really put on her record. She went to the reconciliation. She ended up working for the privately owned store for the summer, and I felt it was one of those very made me believe in society again. But I mean, I really believe that restorative justice restores us as human beings, rather than, I mean, our society has, we don't say I'm sorry very easily, and it's not just about saying I'm sorry, but it's about saying let me restore you to where you are, where you what you want, where you would like to be, and those other things. I appreciate it. Unfortunately, I would not be able to be a part of his training this year because of lots of other duties as a parent and as a teacher. But I'm glad that Champaign County is trying to do this again. Thank you.
Well, thanks for the call. I don't know if there you would want to react to that in any particular way.
The logic of someone mediating disputes that other people are going through is a basic tenet of the change that restorative justice and other practices are bringing. And what's fascinating is that when I put myself in a situation in which I begin to share the experience of conflict that other people have, but I'm not responding to it painfully, and I have a clear procedure to support dialogue, that the changes can occur. So I'm talking about my experience in Brazil, and your caller's relating it to things that have been happening right here in Champaign-Urbana. And this is what we see all over the world in many different cultural contexts. People can find within the roots of their sense of what defines us as a community, and often within the roots of their political understanding, their religious understanding, their sense of themselves in the world and in the communities, they can find the key elements that go in to bringing together those people who are in conflict to care for everybody and create social cohesion.
We have about 7 or 8 minutes left in this hour of focus. Our guest is Dominic Barter. He is well known for working in the area of restorative justice. He and other people in Brazil developed this restorative practice they called Restorative Circles. They have a website, which is restorativecircles.org, if you'd like to find out more about it and them. He's been doing this for a number of years in Brazil, has traveled around the world to talk about it, and is here in Champaign-Urbana to do the same. Here on our program, questions are welcome, 333-9455. And toll-free, 800-222-9455.
I'd like to say something, if I may.
Sure, sure. That
we're aware that many people have, obviously, working lives, and so the work tomorrow will go on into the evening. People are very welcome to drop by in the evening if they weren't available to come during the day. And I'll be showing videos of the process in Brazil so that we can have a little bit of understanding of what it looks like in the places where it developed. And I'll be telling stories about how it's used, but I'll also be inviting people to actually get a taste of the process. So I hope that people who do manage to spend some time of the day with us tomorrow will actually be able to experience what it's like to take their own conflicts to a practice circle and and get a taste of how the process begins to work.
And this is happening at the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center, which is in the old post office in downtown Urbana. I'm sure people will know what that is, right there next to Lincoln Square. And it's still a post office, but also a lot of the space is now taken up by the folks at the Independent Media Center. So stop by if you are interested. I'm sure that there are some people who, when you introduce them to this idea, they are willing to accept that in some circumstances that this would work. But if you start to push it in terms of scaling up the level of the conflict or the level of the hurt, making it more and more difficult to think about what restoring someone would actually mean, they would come to a point where they would say, I can see it working until you get to some point where you'd say, I would think that this would break down.
Well, what we're really working with is the rebuilding of a certain social system. Mm-hmm. And social systems are far too important for us to give up and change lightly. So I really welcome the questioning, the skepticism. I'm mm-hmm. consider myself to be a skeptic of restorative justice. I find a lot of the explanations that we currently have in order to help us understand why restorative justice works to be insufficiently deep enough. And our restorative practices in themselves, including the one that I work with, restorative circles, I consider to be only a small part of what needs to occur if we're going to create a justice system which is really responsive to human needs. So I have a lot of questions about it too. Mm-hmm. And some of the questions that are most key are, is this really going to speak to the gravity of what happened? Is this a way of lightening or diminishing the significance of what has occurred? Is this a way of, are we exchanging a really robust response to what happened for an idea of rehumanizing people? And I want to make sure that's really not the case. This is, for me, the most robust response to what has happened. Because the danger of punishment, the danger of omission, of just ignoring what's going on, is that we de-responsibilize people. When we punish, we say, you're not able to actually take into account the consequences of your own action and what it means for other people. And I want to make sure that we actually create responsibility, which means create power, that we actually empower people to make productive choices that contribute to the well-being of themselves and others within their community. And for those of us who've been harmed and impacted by what has happened, I want to make sure that these people have the care that needs to be taken care of them as people who've suffered the consequences of crime or of painful conflict. But I also want to support them to move out of an experience of being a victim, that is, an experience in which the power to impact my own well-being is out of my reach, and back into an experience of being a community member who is responding to something that has happened in a way that seeks both healing and resolution and reparation where necessary for them, but also creates the conditions whereby this is less likely to happen in the future.
We're coming down to the point where we have about 5 minutes left, and we just got an email here from someone who poses a number of questions, and I think really what the listener would like is for you to talk a little bit more about the details of the training program and if people do want to go and participate in this, a little bit more about what you do, what happens, what the time commitment is, if you can only go for part of this, is it worthwhile?
Well, especially tomorrow. Tomorrow is an overview of the process. I'm going to contextualize the process and invite people to experience the different stages of the restorative process in the sense of really inviting people to a dialogue about community, about the question of justice, and about how we rethink our social systems so that they really respond to our basic human needs. And yes, of course, if you can come in the morning at 8:30 and spend the whole day with us, then you'll get the continuity of that experience. Mm-hmm. And if you're only available for part of the day, we want to make it clear that you're very welcome to come in. And we will attempt, when we recognize that new people have arrived, we'll attempt to make sure that we get them up to speed so that they can join in the practice or understand what's being shown. Okay. From Thursday to Sunday, we're really interested in seeding projects that use this process here. So different groups within the community have been investigating what it would be like to take restorative circles into different aspects of life here. There's the beginnings of conversations with the juvenile detention center to see if aspects of restorative circles could be supportive of the work that they're doing there. We're interested in meeting with people from the local education community to see if aspects of this process could support their work in schools. We're equally interested in partnering with those groups in the state who are already working on similar processes. So we'll make sure that people who come to these events this week get local contact information so they can find local parties to work. But Thursday to Sunday is basically involved in finding out what does it take to facilitate these encounters? What are the questions that we found that are most effective in leading people from a situation of often extreme distrust or even complete unwillingness to talk to each other to a sense of clear actions that respond directly to that situation and create healing? So tomorrow, an overview, and everybody's welcome, even if they're only available for part of the day. And Thursday to Sunday, for those of you who'd really like to get a sense of how to do this, bring this back to your community and create a restorative system within which a practice like restorative circles can create.
And there is no charge.
We work with money in a quite interesting way. The work really doesn't belong to anybody, and it emerged within communities that owned their own projects. So we've decided to give the work away. It's too good to restrict to anybody. I want to make sure that everybody who needs it can get at it. At the same time, we are entirely community funded. So we'll be asking people who come to consider the value of this work and consider what the resources are that are needed to take it forwards and to make as generous a financial contribution as they feel willing to do so. But there is no charge.
All right. Well, and if people would like to find out a little bit more of the details, maybe one thing they could do is go to the website of the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center, because there I think it has more details about the event, when and where and all, and so forth. And if people would just like to find out more about the idea of restorative circles, they might go to your website, and that is restorativecircles.org.
That's right.
All right. Dominic Barter, our guest here, one of the people behind Restorative Circles from here, spending some time from Brazil.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
To a sense of clear actions that respond directly to that situation and create healing. So tomorrow, an overview, and everybody's welcome, even if they're only available for part of the day. And Thursday to Sunday, for those of you who'd really like to get a sense of how to do this, bring this back to your community and create a restorative system within which a practice like restorative circles can create.
And there is no charge.
We work with money in a quite interesting way. The work really doesn't belong to anybody, and it emerged within communities that owned their own projects. So we've decided to give the work away. It's too good to restrict to anybody. I want to make sure that everybody who needs it can get at it. At the same time, we are entirely community funded. So we'll be asking people who come to consider the value of this work and consider what the resources are that are needed to take it forwards and to make as generous a financial contribution as they feel willing to do so. But there is no charge.
All right. Well, and if people would like to find out a little bit more of the details, maybe one thing they could do is go to the website of the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center, because there I think it has more details about the event, when and where and all, and so forth. And if people would just like to find out more about the idea of restorative circles, they might go to your website, and that is restorativecircles.org.
That's right.
All right. Dominic Barter, our guest here, one of the people behind Restorative Circles from here, spending some time from Brazil.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
WILL programming is made possible by Amber Glenn Alzheimer's Special Care Center in Urbana. Amber Glenn works with family and friends to create a plan to support residents' health and independence and provide them with a sense of belonging. More information is available at 384-0100.
And that is it for us here on Focus. We want you to stay tuned, though. There's more coming up in the way of news and features and weather and other things. It's all part of the Afternoon Magazine. The host, Celeste Quinn.
Thank you, David. This is Illinois Public Media, WILL, 580 AM and 90.9 FM, HD3, Urbana. Let's turn our attention to commodity prices. A lot of green on the screen late this morning. December Wheat in Kansas City up 31.5 at 7:18. March 7:33.5 up 31.5. December wheat in Chicago 6:54.25 up 42.75. March 6:87.5 up 39.5. December corn 6:44.25 up 39.25. March 6:55.75 up 38.25. May 6:62.25 up 37.5. July 6:66.75 up 37.5. November beans 12:35.25 up 57.75. January 12:46 up 57.25. March 12:54 up 56.25. May 12:60.25 up 54.75. October meal 3:15, that's up 10.30. October oil 51.93, up 207. October live cattle 121.25, up 122.5. December 121.60, up 1.